disciples are washing their hands before they eat. I mean, come on, Jesus. The very last verse of chapter 6 goes like this: and wherever Jesus went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplace and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. I highly doubt that cloak saw the inside of a washing machine, and I wonder that along with healing others, did Jesus not also encourage some spreading of things that they didn't want to have spread? Jesus, just wash your hands. Come on. From a young age, we were all taught to wash our hands. Coming in from recess, we would line up and get the mud and dirt off our hands. If you visit a hospital or most offices, there will be hand sanitizer there for people to use, especially during cold and flu season. We have been practicing hand rituals our entire life. And in these days, COVID-19 has made us hyper aware, and for good reasons, of our cleanliness, the water particles that leave our mouths, and social distancing, which does not seem to be a thing in Jesus' ministry. But perhaps I'm being a little bit hard on Jesus and his disciples, for we're probably reading our own context into their situation. However, as we keep reading, the Pharisees and scribes are in fact not concerned about the health and well-being of their neighbor. This is not the reason that they confront Jesus. It is not their passion for public health or the well-being of their neighbor. Their reason comes to us in verse 3, where it is based on the rabbi's disobedience to the traditions of the elders. It is Jesus' neglect of tradition, specifically the tradition relating to purity or cleanliness laws, which serves as their basis of accusation. In this tradition, one that follows the laws and rituals of the past are honoring God and are worthy of God's blessings. Those that disobey the laws, who don't wash their hands, they are defiled, they are separated from God. And instead of using this ritual to get closer to God, Pharisees and scribes were using it in a way to exclude others. So in an attempt to undermine and derail the authority of Jesus, whose popularity at this point is just soaring, they confront him and play the tradition card. This is not how we do it. Now, I don't want to diss tradition too much. Traditions are necessary for the big questions. Where do we come from? What has formed us to this place we are in? What is the wisdom of the past that we can use for the now? But I have found this to be true and also important. Tradition unexamined and blindly accepted can trap us in a state of maintenance, going through the works, spinning our wheels, which leaves us untransformed or worse, accepting traditions that do more harm than good. Jesus is not working to abolish tradition, but reimagine it for his time and with this theological sophistication that God is now and always actively pursuing peace and love. He is teaching and living and reshaping the faith he loves so that it better aligns with God's passion for justice. The scene that unfolds is an interreligious dialogue about the Jewish faith, where each group puts forward their understanding of God against the other group. And while we may read into this text thinking that they're in it to win a theological debate, the crowd that is watching this would have knew that the goal was not to win, but to gain a deeper understanding of God's will, which came through talking it out. Publicly, they could weigh in on their responses and decide what is authentic and what is not. What is God's ways and what is a human tradition? Does that theology hold water with the experiences of life and God? And we are waiting to see whether after this conversation, will the people affirm the teachings and ways of Jesus, thus validating his innovations to the faith, or will they reject him? The heart of the matter is change. Jesus points to human traditions and an unwillingness to adapt them to follow God's commandments for their time and place. For instance, if we believe God who created all life and called life itself good, do our traditions seek to innovate in ways that support and allow all life to thrive? Change does not happen quickly, especially in society or institutions. And we can see that in our own country's history. This past week, at age 100, Lucille Times died of complications of COVID-19. Now, if you've never heard the name Lucille Times, that's not surprising. You're probably not alone here. But in 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama, Lucille was doing her daily errands on her way to drop off her clothes at the dry cleaners when at some point her and the city bus had an altercation. We have all been driving, had close calls, we weren't paying attention or someone else wasn't paying attention, or we're on 33, and let's face it, it's nuts out there. But this bus driver, a white man, pursues her in a fit of rage, and she attempts to knock Lucille off the road three different times. And after she parks, he parks his bus on the other side of the street. And the driver yells at her, screaming profanities. And the man, whose heart was formed by these pervasive and racist ideologies where blacks are less than whites, attacked her, and they fought right there in the middle of the street. It wasn't long before Lucille received a blow to the back of the neck. She looked down, and she could see the boots of a police officer who had hit her with his flashlight. He did not hit the bus driver, not the man who pursued her through town, but her, a black woman with a car full of dry cleaning. She was hit and was left to deal with the trauma of being targeted by someone who was sworn to keep her safe. Lucille was left off with a warning that day, to which the officer said, "If you were a man, I would have beat you and your head to jelly." I wish this was a thing of the past. Even though 1955 was not that long ago, but just last week we learned of Aaron Bowman of Louisiana. Through footage that was lost or conveniently mislabeled, you can hear Bowman screaming out, "I'm not resisting, I'm not resisting," as he is beaten by a state police officer. Broken jaw, 3 broken ribs, broken wrist, and a gash to his head that required 6 staples. In our country, there is a tradition, a deep and pervasive legacy of racism, one that says who is worthy and not worthy, defiled or not defiled. And again, tradition that is unexamined and blindly accepted can trap us in a state of maintenance, going through the works, spinning our wheels, which leaves us untransformed or worse, accepting traditions that do more harm than good. Unexamined racism has led to inequality, food insecurity, trauma, and mental illness. It has led children to fear authorities who have sworn to serve and protect them, and sadly, for good reasons. And this is what Jesus says in verse 8. "You abandon the commandment of God and hold to human traditions." As Christ, we must be willing to name all those isms and phobias that keep harmful human traditions at the expense of God's commandments. Yes, that is racism and sexism, homophobia and transphobia. Yes, we must be willing, like Jesus, to prepare and to test our faith convictions and stand on good theology and state these are incompatible with God's will. So why does Jesus take on the issues of hand washing? And you may be thinking, Pastor, it's not racism, it's not xenophobia, it's washing your hands. Why is he and his disciples neglecting what seems to us an insignificant human rule or just a logical ritual? You see, table fellowship was very important to Jesus. Sharing a meal, telling stories, getting to know the depths of who people were, their passions, their fears, their very beings. This was the ministry of Jesus. At the table, sinners were guests of honor. Tax collectors were treated as family. All the boundaries of who is worthy or powerful were dissolved at the table. The washing of the hands was a Jewish tradition at the time being interpreted to exclude Gentiles, those who were not Jewish, which were many of Jesus' dinner guests. Jesus knew that this human tradition was against God's commandment because it neglected the inherent goodness of God's creation, which included Gentiles. So when the Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" Jesus responds, "You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition." In other words, the commandment of God is that all are welcome here. And if your message does not welcome all for how God made them, it's not from God. This is Jesus' innovation to his faith, to the commandment of God that all are welcome. God is dissolving the human tradition that says some are worthy and some are not. Some are fully human while others are less than. And if you try to limit who has access to the table, to the resources around us in life, that's not from God. Jesus goes on to say that there is no such thing as defiled hands or defiled food. There is no such thing as defiled race or defiled nationality or continent. There's no such thing as a defiled sexuality or gender. Verse 21, Jesus says, "For it is from within the human heart that evil intentions come." It is our hearts that continue to hold prejudice, our hearts that keep us from giving our resources to those in need, our hearts that keep us from taking our brown and black neighbors seriously when they say something has got to change. It is our hearts that keep us from following God's commandments. And it takes courageous people like Jesus to keep us centered on God's commandment and re-examine not only our traditions but our very hearts. People like Lucille Times, who would boycott the buses in Montgomery months before Rosa Parks. People like Greta Thunberg, who reminds us of our responsibility to take care of creation. People like Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, Oscar Romero, and so many other names who never made it to the pages of history. Earlier, I mentioned that this interreligious debate was the test to see if Jesus' convictions held up, if in fact people were willing to change, embrace his innovation to the faith, to be more inclusive and continue to follow him. Well, you wouldn't have to look any further than the person right next to you. Here we are 2,000 years later, and while we continue to grow and be better and make our mistakes, We are in Lancaster, Ohio, with a sign out front in our church that says, "Be the church. Protect the environment. Care for the poor. Forgive often. Reject racism. Fight for the powerless. Share earthly and spiritual resources. Embrace diversity. Love God and enjoy this life." So may we continue to innovate our faith as Christ did. May we be guided by God's commandments and not human tradition, dissolving all boundaries that keep us from true and loving relationships. Amen. Amen.